Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. When Reverend Master Peggy Kennett went to Japan, went to the East, she describes in The Wild White Goose that she was a rather stupid woman who did not know exactly why she was going, and that if she could have articulated it at the time, she would have said that it was due to trying to understand the way the world was. That is, having lived through World War II, why suffering existed, why people did horrible things to one another. And as she says in The Wild White Goose, she came to realize that her question should rather have been about her own selfishness. This is actually an extraordinary insight into the Buddha's teaching and Buddhist training, which many people do not understand, even though they might have been practicing in some way or the other for a while. Many books written about the Dharma, when they talk about the basic four noble truths, the existence of suffering, the cause of suffering, say that the cause of suffering is a belief in a separate self. But this, of course, has nothing to do with the matter. The Four Noble Truths are written in the form of a medical prescription. What is the illness? What is the cure? What is the illness? What is the cause? What is the cure? And what is the treatment? The cause of suffering, insofar as Buddhist training is concerned, is our own selfishness. Dogen says that to study the Dharma, and by study he means to investigate and to practice, to study the Dharma is to study the self. All the various teachings and traditions that have developed out of the Buddha's teaching are all about this very thing. If you do not understand or miss this particular point, you are not going to understand what training is. Then Dogen says, to study the Dharma is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. When River Master trained in Japan, the schedule in the monastery and the way of life there was extremely hard, difficult, and continually pushed people past their boundaries. Its purpose was to not give people time to indulge selfishness. They were being constantly told what to do at every minute of the day. this is all very well and good as a means of training, but if the purpose is not understood, then it can become a trap where one thinks that the replication of a particular culture and a particular cultural means are the way to enlightenment. But this is not, has nothing to do with the matter. All the stories in the Zen tradition are all about this training of the self, forgetting the self, studying the self. And always within the context of ordinary people practicing in their ordinary daily lives. In many of the stories in the Zen tradition, one of the questions that is asked is, why did Bodhidharma come from the West, come from India? What is frequently not appreciated is that everybody knew what the answer to that question was. Bodhidharma came from India, came from the West, to find a suitable disciple, a suitable vessel of the Dharma, to whom he could entrust the teaching. So everybody knew that. But when the question was asked in the context of training, it means, am I such a vehicle? Am I such a vessel? Am I such a person? There is a story about this that illustrates this. Master and disciple are sitting together in a room. There is a fireplace which has gone down to ash, and in those days the incense burner was kept burning by the taking of an ember from a fire and putting it on the incense burner and then the incense put on top of it. So no doubt the master and disciple are doing something, whether having tea or doing some sort of task. Or it may have been questions. The disciple asks the teacher, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? The teacher replies, fetch another ember for the incense burner. The teacher was in no way being mysterious. He was referring to the very next thing that needed to be done. He was, in a sense, ignoring a question that was coming from selfish interest and referring the student, the disciple, back to the next thing in ordinary daily life. Basically, to forget the self and do what needs to be done. So, and I'm sure pretty much everybody can empathize with this scenario, the disciple, having not had their question answered to their satisfaction, goes desultorily digging through the ash in a half-hearted manner, and then turns to the teacher and says, there aren't any embers left. Of course, this is also the disciple asking the question about themselves as well. They are saying, there is no spark. The teacher got down from their seat, took hold of a poker, poked to the very center of the ash, and found a glowing ember, and then turned to the disciple and said, then what do you call this? Because the disciple had been continuing to train with the self at that moment, then, as Dogen said, body and mind dropped off. If you think, if body and mind drop off, what else is there? The disciple then bowed, did three full bows to the teacher, and said, thank you very much. And the teacher said, fortunately, it has nothing to do with me. This is also an illustration of the meaning in the scripture where it says, trainees contain the ultimate, masters contain the means, correctly blended. This has a good result. When we train ourselves throughout the day, we observe what our mind is doing. When we are waiting, when we are encountering other trainees, when we are working at something, I referred yesterday evening to the female monk who came in from outside and looked behind her on the bed. When we are engaging with another person, or when we are waiting, or when we are reading a translation of the scripture, what will arise is the critical mind, the desiring mind, the rejecting mind, and the confused mind that arises out of running between these various other minds. When irritation arises, we observe it and let it go. If we start with the small irritations that arise, then we will be able to train with the larger things. When Reverend Master had reached the end of her tether at Sojiji, as it's recorded in the Wild White Goose, the Kensho occurred, the dropping off of body and mind. But what's not recorded in the Wild White Goose is some things that led up to that. And one of them was that she was cleaning out the sink for the upteenth time, because the other people in the house tended to simply dump the tea leaves, which of course they consumed enormous quantities of tea, dump the tea leaves into the sink and leave them. And River Master, trying to work up on herself and trying to be conscientious, etc., and all the things that relate to that, would end up with the task of cleaning up the sink. And so one day, not very far from the Bodhidharma festival, she was cleaning the tea leaves out of the sink, went with people around her complaining about the way she was doing it, or commenting on it, when it occurred to her, what about if the obstructions that are arising is because of my obstructing myself? What about if the reason I can't see clearly is because I'm filling my mind with all sorts of ideas and opinions? And in the same way as this sink is clogged with tea leaves, so is my mind clogged up with the unnecessary. And she said, it struck her so forcefully that this might be so, that she actually walked away from the sink and left the tea leaves for somebody else to clean up. A bit later on, she, as you have read in the Wawaikus, decided to leave Sochiji. She didn't know where she was going, mind you. And so she walked down the roadway towards the gate. And as a result of the previous experience, it came to her mind, maybe I'm mistaken in this. Maybe there's something that I'm not seeing. Too many people, when engaging in training, tell themselves stories. They tell themselves stories about their lives, their marriages, their monastic vocations. And the stories develop into, in their own minds, a huge house. A house, a hut, a house, then a palace. Kind of like the story of the fisherman and his wife. That old story, if you've heard it, I'm not going to do the whole thing, you'll just have to look it up. Where the desires, when satisfied, just simply get bigger and bigger and bigger. The antidote for telling oneself such stories is to say to oneself, I could be wrong, I could be mistaken about this. From a certain perspective, it doesn't matter what you work at as a means of training yourself. In the past, in societies where Buddhism had been established, India, China, and Japan, there was considerably less social choice about going and doing some other way of making a living, It's usually if you were a farmer, you ended up as a farmer. And in the life of the Buddha, we see all sorts of people. All sorts of lay people, in all sorts of circumstances, in all sorts of professions. All of them training themselves to the best of their abilities. And in a way that, like a lot of the Buddha's teachings, are actually quite radical when applied in this particular society. We do not, that we live in, we do not always realize this. Because our minds are filled with all the preconceptions and ideas, prejudices, etc., that we have ended up with. In the time of the Buddha, for example, there was the courtesan, Ambapali. Who was held out when she took refuge and began training as somebody who was keeping the precepts. Which sometimes strikes people as odd. River Master Jiu used to talk about how at Chenung Teng in Malaysia, when the precepts were given, people came, and as is the tradition there, they took the precepts that they felt they could keep. And there were all sorts of people there. From the courtesans to the merchants. And this is because, unlike various views that occur nowadays, Buddhist training is not about getting your ducks in a row or your life in order, and then you train. Neither is it is about that you have to be in some sort of perfect state of mind, or that you need to clear your mind, or that you need to be still in order to begin training. The Buddha taught, and the Zen tradition also teaches, that you begin training where you are. When you hear about letting go of greed, you apply it at the time you hear about it. As Dogen says, do not wait for a better time. Do not wait for a more perfect body. Training has nothing to do with college degrees. It has nothing to do with a certain level of income or a certain level of social status or a certain level of wealth or a certain level of free time. It is one of the misfortunes of the Dharma as it's been taught in this country is that many people cannot conceive of training outside of having enough, having, you know, wealth, time, education. And they think that training can somehow not happen beyond this. So they write articles and publish magazines as if the only people practicing the Dharma in the West were these people like themselves. But this is complete nonsense. People have been practicing the Buddha Dharma in the West for thousands of years. The Greeks were the first non-Indian Buddhists, for example. And I sometimes think, ironically, all those dedicated Christian missionaries who traveled to China and other places and sent back detailed reports on Buddhism in those respective countries ended up actually attracting the people in the West who read about them. This is particularly so of Kuan Yin and Avalokiteshvara. Westerners became attracted to this. The Buddha Dharma was never meant for an elite type of person or group of people. In the Buddha's time, all sorts of people took up the practice. All sorts of people were successful at it. Hundreds and thousands of people, as the Buddha said, attained to the way. Hundreds and thousands of laymen and laywomen of all ages and backgrounds attained to the way. They attained to the way because they practiced it. Now I'm going to end with a quote, which is actually from a film called The Lion in Winter, which is somewhat, it's unconnected with the meaning of the quote, but here we go. Those of you who are interested in the history, it's Eleanor of Aquitaine addressing her children. She calls them her piglets, but I left that out of the quote. She says, "We are the origins of wars. Not history's forces, nor the times, nor justice, nor the lack of it, nor causes, nor religions, nor ideas, nor kinds of government, nor any other thing. We are the killers. We breed wars. For the love of God, can't we love one another just a little? For that is how peace begins. We have so much to love each other for. We have such possibilities, my children. We could change the world." Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.